Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, March 25th, 2020. Coming up this hour.
U.S. equity futures climb after the biggest gain for stocks since 1933.
The White House and Congress strike a deal on a massive stimulus package.
President Trump looks to get Americans back to work by Easter.
And California reports the first death of a patient under 18 years old.
The White House says anyone who has been in New York City should self-quarantine because of COVID-19. Plus, Mayor de Blasio says things will not be back to normal by April. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Ahead in sports, Noah Syndergaard needs Tommy John surgery. What's next for the Mets? And the Jets lose arguably Sam Darnold's top weapon.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Withem. For 45 years, Withem has been committed to helping businesses be in a position of strength. For guidance on business interruption, continuity issues, and remote workplace solutions, visit Withem.com.
Global equities are surging after yesterday's record gain for stocks. 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 36 points, Dow futures up 595, and NASDAQ futures up 115. The DAX in Germany up 2.3%, CAC in Paris up 2.9%, FTSE 100 up 3%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 0.85%, the yield on the 2-year 0.37%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.3%, up 32 cents at $24.33 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.7%, or $11.90, at $16.51.10 an ounce. And this data check brought to you by Interactive Brokers. They charge margin loan rates from as low as 0.75% to 1.75%. Rates subject to change. Restrictions apply. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Nathan.
Karen, we begin this morning on Capitol Hill, where Democrats and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell have agreed on a stimulus package to fight the fallout from COVID-19.
At last, we have a deal. After days of intense discussions, the Senate has reached a bipartisan agreement on a historic relief package for this pandemic.
And for details on the plan, we bring in Martin DeCaro now from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Nathan, the historic package tees up more than $2 trillion in government spending and tax breaks. Sources tell us there's $500 billion to back loans and provide aid to businesses, more than $350 billion for small business to maintain payrolls, plus additional unemployment insurance. The measure also gives $1,200 checks to most Americans. Congress hopes to pass the measure as soon as today. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Martin, thank you. Hopes for that stimulus package help stocks post their biggest one-day gain since 1933. The Dow surged 11% and is poised to open higher again today. Savita Subramanian is head of U.S. equity strategy at Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
This is a great environment to really separate the wheat from the chaff and look for companies that have been beaten down for no reason besides just liquidating portfolios and moving into cash. And look for the companies that are actually going to rise from the ashes.
Yesterday's biggest gains came from the most battered industries, with energy, retail, autos, and airlines among the biggest movers.
Well, now that the stimulus plan is nearly a done deal, the White House is looking for additional ways to support the economy. Sources tell us it's considering deferring tariffs paid by U.S. companies. We get details now from Bloomberg's Jenny Leonard.
So what we've learned now is that there are discussions in the early stages to debate whether to walk this delicate line between cutting tariffs and giving some kind of other relief to companies right now that are in desperate need of it. So what is being discussed is the tariffs would all remain in place, but all the companies that are importing goods would have to defer their payments by 3 months. So that means a lot of the cash is actually staying in the company's pockets in a time where they really, really need it.
It's a sharp turnaround for President Trump, who's resisted calls for tariff relief. The current plan would defer payments across a broad range of goods for 90 days.
As the White House looks to boost the economy, the president is proposing an aggressive timeline to get Americans back to work.
I hope we can do this by Easter. I think that would be a great thing for our country, and we're all working very hard to make that a reality.
That timeline puts the president at odds with state leaders who have ordered shutdowns extending weeks beyond Easter. Still, the president's push drew measured response from Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
You can look at a date, but you've got to be very flexible. And on a literally day-by-day and week-by-week basis, you need to evaluate the feasibility of what you're trying to do.
And Fauci says some parts of the country may be able to reopen next month while others continue to fight the outbreak. Easter falls on April 12th.
In the meantime, deaths from the coronavirus continue to climb as the outbreak spreads in the U.S. and Europe. For the very latest, we're joined live by Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Nathan, fatalities around the world are nearing 19,000 as infections surpass 400,000. Here in the U.S., there are 55,000 cases and 800 deaths. Nearly half of all the infections are in New York State. Meantime, in Florida, the National Guard being deployed to airports to greet flights from New York. The Guard is mandating travelers from the state to self-isolate and asking for information on where they plan to stay on their visit. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. We have some sobering news out of California. The state is reporting what looks to be the first U.S. death of a person under 18 years of age. We get the details now from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter in San Francisco.
County Health Department Director Barbara Ferrer said, "This is a devastating reminder that COVID-19 affects people of all ages." Meanwhile, the state is scrambling to acquire about 1 billion sets of gloves and hundreds of millions of gowns, surgical masks, and face shields for healthcare workers and first responders. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ed. Turning to markets now, global stocks are adding to yesterday's record surge. Asian equities posted their biggest daily gain since 2008. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has details from our Singapore bureau. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Japan's Nikkei 225 rose 8% to notch up its best three-day gain since the financial crisis. Banks in China climbed on reports policymakers are mulling a cut to the benchmark deposit rate. The CSI 300 posted a second daily gain of more than 2.5%. Stocks in Seoul rose almost 6%, while the won gained for a second day as the South Korean government eased FX prudential rules to support dollar funding. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. It is 6:07 on Wall Street now, and Michael Barr is here with the latest world and national news headlines. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The $2 trillion stimulus plan agreed to by White House and Senate leaders would ban any company controlled by President Donald Trump or his children from receiving loans or investments from Treasury programs. According to a summary circulated by Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, businesses owned by the president, vice president, members of Congress, or heads of executive departments would be excluded from receiving that aid. The block also would extend to companies controlled by their children, spouses, or in-laws. The White House urged anyone who has been in New York to self-quarantine for 14 days to stop the spread of the coronavirus, which has become widespread in the city.
I have to be honest about the fact that we do not expect this to go quickly, and I wish we did, but we don't. I've had several conversations this week with President Trump, and I respect his office for sure, and I'm trying to work with him to ensure that we get support in this city. But I have to respectfully disagree with him when he says that he's not looking at months for this crisis.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says all the measures that they've taken in the state have unfortunately not flattened the curve of infections.
What am I going to do with 400 ventilators when I need 30,000? You pick the 26,000 people who are going to die because you only sent 400 ventilators.
New Jersey's Democratic Governor Phil Murphy touched on the case growth in his state.
It's not good. We now have 3,675 positive cases. I have to say we're not shocked by that. We knew this was coming in part because we've opened up testing so aggressively, but the numbers are going straight up. And sadly, we announced 17 new deaths for a total now of 44 blessed souls who have lost their lives in our state.
According to a Gallup poll, about 6 in 10 Americans approve of the job President Trump is doing to combat the coronavirus crisis. The poll also shows his approval rating at 49%. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 6:09 is the time now on Wall Street. Let's get the Bloomberg NBC Sports update now. Good morning, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. As if times weren't tough enough with game cancellations, New Yorkers are hit with a double dose of bad news on Tuesday. Mets star pitcher Noah Syndergaard will undergo Tommy John surgery. Since he burst onto the scene as one of the hardest throwers in history, some fans feared this day may come. MLB.com Mets insider Anthony DiComo explains.
Mets pitcher Noah Syndergaard has a torn ulnar collateral ligament in his right elbow and will undergo Tommy John surgery, ending his season before it begins. It's a significant blow to a Mets team that was counting on Syndergaard to be the number two starter behind Cy Young Award winner Jacob DeGrom, and will now be without him for the foreseeable future.
Even without Thor, it's a promising rotation led by Jacob DeGrom, Marcus Stroman, Rick Porcello, Steven Matz, and Michael Wacha. NFL news. Jets quarterback Sam Darnold was just starting to get comfortable with wide receiver Robbie Anderson, and now he's gone. Anderson agreed Tuesday to a two-year $20 million deal with the Carolina Panthers, $12 million coming in year one. Anderson will play for his college coach while at Temple, Matt Rhule. Jets wasted no time looking for a replacement, signing Breshad Perriman to a one-year deal. Perriman had career-high across the board in Tampa Bay last season. And Devils and 76 owner Josh Harris has done an about-face amid overwhelming public scrutiny for saying he'd have employees take a pay cut due to lost revenue from the coronavirus. Harris issued an apology on Tuesday and rescinded the pay reductions. And the NFL and the owners at odds over what to do with the NFL draft. The league wants to televise the event April 23rd through the 5th. The owners say they won't have enough time for physicals and other business. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thank you. Equities building on yesterday's surge on the promise of a stimulus from the Washington. S&P futures right now are higher by 27 points. Dow futures up 446. NASDAQ futures a gain of 84 points. DAX in Germany up 1.1%. CAC in Paris higher by 2%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd. Yield 0.84%. Yield on a two-year note 0.37%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 6:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we speak with the Vice Dean of Public Health Practice at the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health on the coronavirus response and potential pathways to treatments. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures on the rise this morning. S&P futures up about 25 points. Dow futures up 425. And NASDAQ futures up 84. The DAX in Germany's up 0.9%. 10-year Treasury, little change now. 0.84% is the yield. The yield on the two-year, 0.37%. NYMEX crude oil also little change now. Well, now up 0.2%. It's up 4 cents at $24.04 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.7% at $16.51.40 an ounce. That's down $11.90. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, U.S. lawmakers and the White House have agreed on a $2 trillion domestic aid package to help those affected by the coronavirus pandemic. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called an unemployment compensation on steroids. The world's largest democracy is under the world's biggest lockdown, with India's 1.3 billion people ordered to stay home in a bid to stop the coronavirus. The British government is planning to shut down Parliament for 4 weeks starting tonight in an attempt to slow the spread of the virus. Several politicians have fallen ill, including a health minister. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 6:19 now on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. I'm Nathan Hager. As the coronavirus continues to spread around the world, Johns Hopkins University has been leading the way in tracking the global pandemic and looking for effective treatments. So we're pleased to have this morning with us from the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, Dr. Josh Sharfstein. He is Vice Dean for Public Health Practice and Community Engagement. Good to speak with you this morning, Dr. Sharfstein. Thanks for being with us. Where are we in terms of flattening the curve of infection in the U.S.?
We're not exactly sure where we are. We're trying in many parts of the country. We're trying hard to flatten the curve, but we're not quite able to tell where we are because this virus has some delays built in. It takes a while to get infected. Once you're infected, it takes a while to get sick. Most of the major efforts have started really in the last couple weeks. So it's just a little too early to tell where we are. But, you know, we will know within a few weeks, I think, you know, just how that initial in the parts of the country that have done it, that initial effort has gone.
Is that delay in knowing where we are built into the virus itself, or does that point to a need for more testing?
It's partly built into the virus itself, and it also partly reflects the fact that, you know, we have limited visibility into the actual spread of the virus, that the best thing that we're able to track is the number of sick people who come to the hospital, which is a delayed, you know, feature.
Should people who are not feeling sick be coming in then to come and get tested?
I know they should not. Absolutely not. I mean, that puts them at risk potentially for getting sick. So, you know, the most important thing is to stay as, you know, stay at home if at all possible, if you're just do your essential job and come back and stay at home. This is a moment to really quiet things down, to buy time. We're worried about healthcare workers and their access to protective equipment. We also need to build a more robust public health response. You know, people wonder, well, like, is there anything short of this kind of shutdown that can control an infectious disease? And the answer is, if you can get it to a reasonable size, then you can do isolation and quarantine. You stop the virus from transmitting from one person to another. But to do that, it's more than hope. You have to build the public health response to be able to do that.
The question so many people have as they start working from home in the midst of this pandemic is how long they need to stay at home. We heard from the White House yesterday saying anybody who's been in New York City should be self-quarantining for 2 weeks. Is that a measured response?
It's an appropriate response given how much transmission there's been in the city. I mean, I understand very much that people want answers, and what's possibly one of the most frustrating points at the moment is the uncertainty. You know, I mean, why don't we know? Why can't you just tell us what day? And we don't know. So it's an uncertain moment. But I do think it's important to realize that we won't have this uncertainty forever. I really think, you know, within a month, 6 weeks, we'll have a much better sense of where things stand in different parts of the country. There'll be more testing, but we'll also have a sense of how some of these measures have worked, and we'll have a much better idea of what's coming and what's going to be necessary. So we need to, you know, recognize that there's uncertainty, but we won't be so uncertain forever. As an example, we now have the approval of serology tests, which determine whether people have been exposed to the virus. The greater use of those is going to help in all sorts of ways for us to understand where the virus is. It'll help us to be more strategic about what measures are needed. But right now, it's a safe thing to do to stay home, live with a little bit more uncertainty, and just recognize that we'll have a better idea. That doesn't mean it's going to be great news, but it's, you know, at least we'll know more where we are and what's necessary.
In our last minute here, Dr. Sharfstein, what do we know about that anti-malarial drug, hydroxychloroquine, that the president has been calling a miracle drug? Does it make sense to loosen regulations to get that out to the market more quickly?
Here's the thing. The concept of loosening regulations or cutting red tape, what they're really talking about is not getting evidence about whether chloroquine works. That's the drug. And it's really important to have treatments. Everybody wants treatments, but we want treatments that work, not treatments that might possibly work or someone thinks might work. It's not that hard to do a good study, and a good study will tell us whether it works. I've heard from people who have read the research on this, and they are really unimpressed with the initial studies, but the studies aren't that good. So do a real study, and don't describe getting evidence as, you know, loosening regulations or cutting red tape. Get the evidence.
Good to get your insights this morning, Dr. Sharfstein. Thanks again for being with us here on Bloomberg Daybreak. Dr. Josh Sharfstein is Vice Dean for Public Health Practice and Community Engagement at the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health. And you can track the latest on the coronavirus pandemic on the Bloomberg Terminal. Just use the function VRUS Go or find all the latest developments online at Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. S&P futures higher by 22 points now. Dow futures up 360. NASDAQ futures a gain of 75 points. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by MBAF, CPAs and advisors dedicated to solving complex tax and accounting challenges, identifying opportunities, and helping businesses maximize profits. Learn more at MBAFCPA.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And at 6:30 on Wall Street, good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. equity futures are climbing after the biggest gain for stocks since 1933. Hopes for a stimulus package are boosting sentiment after the White House and Congress struck a deal on a bill to fight the fallout from COVID-19. And here with details is Bloomberg's Derek Wallbank.
We're expecting legislative language to come out early in the morning. The Senate is out until noon, probably a vote in the afternoon, early evening, then it's on to the House. This looks like it's done. All of the principals are saying they agree, and for the bits that they don't have written down, they have an agreement on what it's supposed to look like when it's written.
The sources tell us the measure includes $500 billion to back loans and provide aid to businesses, more than $350 billion for small business to maintain payrolls, plus additional unemployment insurance. The measure also gives $1,200 checks to most Americans.
At the same time, President Trump is proposing an aggressive timeline to get Americans back to work.
I hope we can do this by Easter. I think that would be a great thing for our country, and we're all working very hard to make that a reality.
That timeline puts the president at odds with state leaders who have ordered shutdowns extending to the end of April. Easter falls on April 12th.
In the meantime, deaths from the coronavirus continue to climb as the outbreak spreads in the U.S. and Europe. For the very latest, we're joined live by Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Nathan, good morning. Fatalities around the world are nearing 19,000 as infections surpass 400,000. Here in the U.S., there are 55,000 cases and 800 deaths. Nearly half of all infections are in New York State. Meantime, in Florida, the National Guard is being deployed to airports to greet flights from New York. The Guard's mandating travelers from the state to self-isolate and asking for information on where they plan to stay on their visit. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. And we have these headlines. Crossing the Bloomberg target, dumping the full-year sales and profit forecast it gave just 3 weeks ago, even as sales in March have soared, underscoring the difficulty retailers are facing in navigating the unfolding coronavirus crisis. Futures are higher this morning. S&P futures up about 19 points. Dow futures up 297. NASDAQ futures up 60. The DAX in Germany is now up a tenth of a percent. It's been trimming its gains. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 0.83%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.36%. NYMEX crude oil little changed at $24 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.8% or $13.50 at $16.49.80 an ounce. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Okay, Karen, thank you. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and this news update is brought to you by Land Rover. The only adventure sales event is happening now until March 31st. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond. Now here's Michael Barr.
Nathan, thank you very much. The $2 trillion stimulus plan agreed to by White House and Senate leaders would ban any company controlled by President Donald Trump or his children from receiving loans or investments from Treasury programs. According to a statement from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, businesses owned by the president, vice president, members of Congress, or heads of executive departments would be excluded from receiving that aid. While President Donald Trump says he wants the country back open by Easter, healthcare officials are saying the situation in New York is dire. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter is covering that story.
Dr. Deborah Birx has some stark statistics.
About 56% of all the cases in the United States are coming out of that metro area, and 60% of all the new cases are coming out of the metro New York area, and 31% of the people succumbing to this disease.
She says anybody who has traveled from New York should self-isolate for 14 days. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says April will be worse than March regarding the virus. He is saying ventilators will be the key. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
California Governor Gavin Newsom says this disease impacts everybody. At a news conference last night, Newsom says young people are disproportionately affected by the virus.
50% of the 2,102 individuals that have tested positive, 50% are between the age of 18 and 49. I'll repeat that. Half of those that have tested positive to date in the state of California are 18 to 49 years old.
Meanwhile, the first U.S. death of a person under the age of 18 has been reported in California's Los Angeles County from COVID-19. The U.S. Navy says coronavirus has reached its ships at sea. Acting Navy Secretary Thomas Modlay says three personnel aboard the carrier, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, have tested positive and transported to a military hospital.
We've identified all those folks that they've had contact with, and we're quarantining them as well. This is an example of our ability to keep our ships deployed at sea, underway, even with active COVID-19 cases.
Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. Just before 6:36 on Wall Street, it's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. Even the hard-throwing, invincible man that Mets fans call Thor is done for the foreseeable future. Noah Syndergaard will have Tommy John surgery after feeling elbow discomfort for nearly a month. The surgery, according to MLB.com Mets insider Anthony DeComo, will set him back all of 2020 and part of 2021. The Mets are still considered to be one of the NL East's favorites, with an accomplished pitching staff led by Cy Young winner Jacob deGrom. Marcus Stroman slides into the second spot, vacated by Syndergaard, and it's Rick Porcello, Steven Matz, and Michael Wacha to round out the order. Porcello and Wacha have enjoyed postseason success recently with the Red Sox and Cardinals. Tough day for Jets fans, who will have to cope with Sam Darnold losing one of his top threats. Wide receiver Robbie Anderson signs with the Carolina Panthers for 2 years, $20 million, $12 million due his first year. The move reunites Anderson with his college coach at Temple, Matt Rhule, who left Baylor to test out the NFL waters. Jets immediately went on the offensive to find speed, inking Brashad Perriman to a one-year deal to replace Anderson. He had career highs in Tampa Bay and will team up opposite of Jamison Crowder. The NFL and their owners are at crossroads with what to do with the upcoming draft, April 23rd through the 25th. Public events in Las Vegas have been canceled, but the league wants to televise the event. Teams feel that player physicals and other day-to-day business is lagging behind. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Thank you, Rob. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
5G wireless won't help rural Americans shelter in place. I'm Tara LaChapelle, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Americans all around the country are being advised to stay home to slow the spread of the coronavirus. That means adults and children are powering up their laptops and tablets to work and study remotely for the time being, if they can. But that may not be possible for millions of Americans living in rural areas. Only 63% of rural Americans say they have a broadband internet connection at home, according to the Pew Research Center. And download speeds of 100 megabits per second, which is the minimum that households using multiple devices need nowadays, were available to just 59% of the rural population, according to the FCC. What makes this all the more maddening is that the problem has been willfully overshadowed by the fascination of late with 5G wireless, and ignoring the broadband issue has economic consequences. As a pandemic now paralyzes the country, where you live could determine how you come out on the other side of it. I'm Tara LaChapelle. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. 6:38 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
This may sound familiar to an industry that's become prolific at tacking on fine print and extras to airfares. House Democrats are tacking on their own fine print to a proposed $71 billion package to rescue carriers and airports struggling with the coronavirus. Airlines would get $37 billion in grants to keep workers on the job as part of the plan, but those carriers would be required to adhere to new emissions requirements. The measure would also provide as much as $21 billion in loans to help air carriers continue operations amid plummeting travel. Airlines receiving aid would have to start offsetting their carbon emissions in 2025 and reduce their overall emissions by 50% by 2050, according to a summary of the $2.5 trillion stimulus bill provided by House Democrats. It would also finance the purchase of newer, more efficient planes as an incentive to scrap older model aircraft. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. These red headlines just crossed the Bloomberg terminal moments ago. Spain is reporting its deadliest day of the coronavirus outbreak with 738 deaths reported just today. And Buckingham Palace in the UK says Charles, the Prince of Wales, heir to the British throne, has tested positive for coronavirus and has mild symptoms. Some other stories we're following. Apple may reopen some of its retail stores on a staggered basis next month. All 458 Apple locations outside China are currently closed. Apple has extended work-from-home ability for many employees through at least April 5th. Facebook says its advertising business is taking a hit in some parts of the world. At the same time, the social network says the coronavirus outbreak has led to an unprecedented spike in usage. In Italy, time spent on Facebook jumped 70%, and shares of Nike are higher by 12% in early trading. Online order growth helped push the company's sales past estimates, suggesting it is weathering the coronavirus pandemic. S&P futures paring their gains now higher by 2 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Anshin. The tax deadline is approaching. Business owners need advisors like Anshin that enable you to focus on your business while they identify tax-saving opportunities so you're not leaving money on the table. Visit Anshin.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and S&P futures erased gains and stocks in Europe paired in advance while investors wait for details on government rescue packages to counter the hit from the coronavirus. The stocks Europe 600 also erasing gains. It had risen as much as 4.8% this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're down about 15 points. Dow futures down 19, NASDAQ futures down 31. And the DAX in Germany is down 1.2% now. CAC in Paris up 0.2%. And the FTSE 100 down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 0.82%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.34%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.5% on 60 cents at $23.40 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.9% or $14.10 at $16.49.20 an ounce. The euro 1.0817 against the dollar. British pound 1.1919 and the yen 111.20. Zero. And Target dumping the full-year sales and profit forecast it gave just 3 weeks ago, even as sales in March have soared. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, this just in Britain, the Prince of Wales is said to have tested positive for coronavirus. Prince Charles is the eldest son of Queen Elizabeth. The British government is planning to shut down Parliament for 4 weeks starting tonight in the latest attempt to slow the spread of coronavirus. Several politicians have fallen ill, including a health minister. Also breaking, Spain reports the deadliest day of the virus outbreak with 738 deaths. It comes as U.S. lawmakers and the White House have agreed on a $2 trillion domestic aid package. Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah announced that he has tested negative for COVID-19 after going into self-quarantine. Following news that GOP Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky tested positive for coronavirus. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's 6:49 on Wall Street. Time now to check what is going on in D.C., where the top story is. That late-night agreement on a massive stimulus measure. Later today, President Trump will speak by phone with nonprofits on the coronavirus response, and G20 leaders plan to hold a virtual summit tomorrow on mounting a coordinated global response to the pandemic. But we want to get more now on the latest development, that nearly $2 trillion stimulus package. Wendy Schiller is back with us now, chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. As so many things do in Washington, Wendy, the agreement came after days of late-night negotiations, and the deal itself came after hours. What is your assessment on what it took for lawmakers to finally get to yes?
Well, I mean, I think there are two key provisions the Democrats really wanted, which was, we talked about on Monday, an extension of unemployment for a certain amount of time, and they got, I think, about 13 extra weeks in addition to these cash payments that will go out to people with incomes between $75,000 and $99,000. So I think the extension of unemployment was very important to the Democrats, and the oversight board. You know, there's about $450 billion worth of either subsidies, loans, payments, sort of foggy, some of the ways that it's described, for companies that have been directly affected by COVID-19. And that was going to be up to the discretion of the Secretary of Treasury on how those deals are structured, when they would have to be paid back, and any conditions corporations would have to meet to get the money. The Democrats insisted that there would be conditions, namely you have to keep your 90% of your employees on your payroll, both for small businesses and large corporations, and that there be an oversight board appointed by Congress. So I think those were the really big sticking points, and the Democrats asked for other things I don't think they got, but those were the main things that they really pushed hard for.
And, of course, it sounds like there's going to be much more stimulus besides this. The White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow was talking yesterday that it could reach as high as $6 trillion. What kind of pushback could we anticipate from something from an amount that high?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of ways you can do that. You can forgive things. You can, obviously, the president's already suspended interest on student loans accruing. There are a lot of things, mortgage payments that are subsidized by the federal government. There are a lot of ways in which the federal government can ease some of the financial burden on people by taking away or holding off or not charging interest on the money that people have borrowed that's guaranteed by the federal government. So the stimulus package that he's talking about, the other incentives, may not be cash going out the door. It may be the fact that they're going to suspend cash coming in the door. It will still have an impact on the deficit, but it's not quite the same thing. In that way, I think you can get some more conservative Republicans on board. Remember, the chief of staff now, the new chief of staff of the president, Mark Meadows, used to be the head of the Freedom Caucus, very conservative group in the House, sort of the offspring of the Tea Party, and they care a lot about deficits. So there'll be ways of doing this which won't be as much outflow. So I think that's the way they're going to try to sell it.
President Trump has been on Twitter this morning talking not necessarily about the stimulus package, but pushing back at criticism that he's maybe appearing to be butting heads with governors as many of them take the lead on the pandemic, particularly New York Governor Andrew Cuomo saying that it's fake news, that he's working against Andrew Cuomo. What is the risk for the president potentially appearing to be sort of at loggerheads with the governors as they lead their state-by-state response?
I don't think there's a risk for him per se. You know, if you look at the map of the states that have enacted all of the most serious restrictions and the states that have been affected most seriously by coronavirus, it tends to look blue. It tends to be states mostly, not exclusively, like Ohio is an example of a state that's Republican. But generally, these are states that are run by Democratic governors. So I think the Southeast and some of the West and the Midwest, where Trump is pretty strong and they haven't taken as many restrictions, look at Texas, for example, I think he's not going to pay a price for that. That's the style people expect for him. That's what his base expects from him. You know, governors will decide on April 12th or whatever that date is for Easter when, in fact, they're going to open up their states. And I don't think Trump will be able to push them to do anything that they don't want to do. And they're the front lines. The state legislatures, the governors, they're front lines. It's not just about reelection. It's that they have to worry about their own people. So they'll do what they're going to do, and he'll just kind of push and needle, but I don't think it really hurts him. It doesn't hurt him room with his base, and the people who vote Democratic aren't going to vote for him anyway.
So you don't think he's going to hold to that Easter deadline?
Well, what can he do? I mean, what's he going to do, cut off the stimulus they just passed? I mean, that's not, he's not going to do that, right? I mean, he wants to get reelected. He wants the economy back open. So whatever he has to do to look like he's trying, he'll certainly blame those governors if they won't open up their economy. But in fact, you know, they are running the show, and that's what federalism does. And that's one of the good things about federalism, but it's also one of the bad things about federalism, because some states aren't doing enough, and then you wonder how you're going to have airplane travel. How are you going to open up airline travel when some states are being really aggressive and others aren't? You're going to have states try to erect borders against people coming in from outside. In Rhode Island, a small state, the governor said you get off a plane, you got to self-quarantine for 14 days. That's what governors will do, and that's going to put a real kink in trying to get the economy nationally off the ground. So somebody's got to tell Trump that, and that's the real sticking point. You can't get the national economy off the ground unless everybody's in on opening it up, and I don't think we're going to see that.
Do you think the president is looking more like he's getting on the same page with his health advisors as he continues to grapple with this?
Well, I think he's getting significant pushback from his health advisors. I think there's a lot of things the Secretary of Health and Human Services administratively can do that to keep things rolling. For example, you know, some states are opening up the Obamacare exchange again when they have a state exchange. They already said people who are unemployed lost their health insurance. They can get health insurance now, which is highly unusual. Tremendous pressure building on the federal government to open up the federal version of that exchange. And that's going to be a huge landmark for the Republicans, because all the efforts they've made to repeal Obamacare, and if they open it up now, I think that effort is just cut out from under them and they can't do it again. So there are a lot of policy implications, not just the stimulus, not just the deficit, but lots of things the Republicans have opposed in the past they need now, and they need to institutionalize. And once they do that, voters will get used to it, and it's going to be very hard to roll them back.
Thanks, as always, Wendy. Good speaking with you. That's Brown University Political Science Chair Wendy Schiller. And again, you can track the very latest on the coronavirus pandemic on the Bloomberg Terminal. The function is VRUS Go, and there's more as well online at Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Karen. Unprecedented levels of disaster declarations due to COVID-19 have overloaded the Small Business Administration's Office of Disaster Assistance. Their website reads, "We're experiencing high volumes of traffic and the site might be slow." It is. They're receiving up to 30,000 phone calls a day, with the expectation that's going to increase to 60,000 a day. They are so overwhelmed that they're now looking to hire. The SBA soliciting contractors with call centers, and they need them quickly. The SBA is planning to start issuing awards as soon as this week. Now, the usual rules may not apply. The White House Office of Management and Budget updating its guidance to federal agencies on how to manage contracts in light of the challenges posed by the coronavirus. OMB encourages agencies to explore what they call special emergency procurement authorities. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
John Tucker, thank you. We did see futures erase their gains this morning. S&P futures are now down 24 points. Dow futures down 82. NASDAQ futures down 75. We are watching some stocks moving in early trading. Boeing among them is higher, up 9.5% this morning. Carnival is up 7.5%, and Apple up 0.9%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32, yield 0.81%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.35%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.8% at $23.35 a barrel. That's down 65 cents. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.